G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
realfaith.org.au. We do ministry in the far east of Russia, and Sarah got up and I talked about our life with Sarah, and it was interpreted in Russian. And when I had finished, I had all these beautiful Russian ladies just run at me, into my arms, and hug me, and they were weeping and crying. And because of Sarah, it showed them that we might look on the outside as if we've got it all together, but really we are as human as they are, and we also have troubles and problems in our lives.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Well, today we have the conclusion of our three-part conversation with Lawrence and Louise Hirsch. As we heard previously, Lawrence and Louise were led by God to do ministry work among Jewish people. Also, we heard how their daughter Sarah was born with severe brain damage and how this has had an enormous impact on their lives. Today, Lawrence and Louise will share how God has used Sarah's life in unexpected and remarkable ways.
When Sarah was one, I went to a birthday party. And I remember this birthday party, I didn't really want to be there because all the other babies who had turned one were starting to walk and starting, to move around. Yet Sarah just lay there. And I was so sad and I just wanted to run away and hide. And I didn't know somebody was watching me. So I only heard about it a year later when I had held a birthday party for my son Asher, and a lot of the mums who were at that birthday party I'd been to a year ago, I invited them as well. And a lady walked in with a baby in her arms and she gave me a gift. And she said, I really want to give you this gift for Sarah. And I said, why? And she said, I have something really important to tell you. I saw you a year ago at that birthday party we were at. And she said the baby in her womb was diagnosed with a severe brain abnormality. And that was a Saturday. On the Monday, she had booked to go to have an abortion. And she said, you know, when I saw you with your little girl, I thought to myself, if that woman can do it, so can I.
Wow.
So she cancelled her abortion.
Wow.
The most beautiful part of the story is that the baby she was holding in her arms was completely normal, completely healthy baby. Mm. He had no brain abnormality. So she had a misdiagnosis, yet she didn't abort because she saw Sarah.
Hmm.
And I just knew right at that moment when she told me that story that the Lord had given us Sarah for far greater plans and purposes than we could ever have imagined. And Sarah had saved this child's life.
Hmm.
And that was amazing, incredible. You know, when Sarah was 2 years old, she was very, very sick again. For 10 days, she was in hospital. She had so many seizures that the nurses didn't even want to walk into her ward to care for her. And again, the doctors told us, they said, sorry, she will die. So 4 times in those 10 days, we held Sarah in our arms and actually said goodbye to her.
Hmm.
We had to release her to the Lord because she was having so many seizures. And to see her suffer like that was so painful. And I remember the doctors coming back to me again saying to Lawrence and I, take her home. There's nothing more we can do. Let her die at home.
Mm.
So we took her home. And I just remember crying on the bathroom floor, sobbing, sobbing to God. I said to the Lord, Lord, you said that you would never tempt us beyond what we can bear.
Mm.
This is what your word says.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel holding Sarah in my arms and saying goodbye to her and giving her to you and then you not taking her is more than I can bear because I don't understand. Why are you allowing this? And Sarah just started picking up every day. She started getting better and better and even started nursing again. And it was really a miracle that this child had such a desire and a will to live. And someone said to me once, don't worry about the severity of her brain damage. Just minister to her spirit because she's a whole human being created in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who she is. We can tell you story after story about Sarah's life. You know, she's actually 28 years old today.
Wow.
She is living against all odds. She has no hypothalamus, which controls your body temperature. So we have to be constantly caring for her and watching her temperature in case it drops, because if it drops too low, then her body can shut down and she can go into a coma. We are, Sarah lives at home with us. We are still waking up at night. We're still changing like nappies, as you do with babies.
Mm.
We feed her orally with smooth and pureed foods. She has a peg in her tummy to help her get fluids. She has seizures, is on seizure medication, and she's in a wheelchair. And yes, it is difficult, but what God has done in each one of our lives, like we have now four children.
Mm-hmm.
We have my oldest son, Asher, who was two when Sarah was born.
Mm-hmm.
Today, he's a human rights lawyer, and he's so passionate about helping the marginalized and the underprivileged and, you know, the refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And his passion comes out of Sarah's disability. He often says, "Mom, it's because of Sarah and because of what he saw in the slums in South Africa that has made him so passionate and, you know, being the person that he is today." And all my children have become so compassionate. And I have a son, Jesse, who's 23 now, and a beautiful daughter, Leora, who is our baby. She's 20 years old, living in Israel. Each one of them have got their own stories about how Sarah has shaped them. But not only them, many, many, like Lauren said, of our carers who come in to help us. In fact, we couldn't do without our carers.
Yes, Sarah really has shaped the way that we do ministry.
Mm.
And she has really helped us to understand a lot more about how God works through trials and tribulations and suffering in our lives. And he uses that to mold us. And that certainly has helped us in ministering to a very broken people, Jewish people who have been through a lot of suffering and a lot of painful experiences, not only individually but corporately.
Mm-hmm.
And so Louise often says that Sarah is the backbone of our ministry, and I think it's quite true. And so it's amazing that God has sustained us through these experiences. And when you're going through them, you think, how can you ever get through this? But when you look back, you can see God's grace and how he molds us and uses our experiences as a testimony to others. And so that really has been true in our ministry. And so when we came back from South Africa with Sarah as a three-year-old little baby, we at that time began the work of Celebrate Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And we started a mission organization reaching out to Jewish people here in Australia. Today, 24 years later, that ministry is not only in Australia, but we have work in New Zealand and in Russia and in Israel.
Wow.
And we continually learn lessons through Sarah that really help us shape our ministry. For instance, one of the earlier lessons that I learned coming back to Australia and starting a mission organization, I was very driven, very determined to fill up every moment of the day that I could in sharing the gospel with Jewish people, serving the Lord in ministry, and there, of course, were a lot of challenges at home with looking after Sarah at the same time.
And
I know that, for instance, this one day I was feeling a little bit frustrated because I had to cut short ministry time to go and fetch Sarah from her school that she was going to.
Mm.
And I was feeling very irritated and almost guilty that I had to stop ministry to go pick up my disabled daughter. And the Lord really showed me something that really has remained with me and continues to be a lesson. And it was, the Lord said to me, "Whatever you do to the least of my brethren, you do unto me."
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a revelation that what I was doing for my disabled daughter Sarah was unto him, as if I was picking him up to school, as if caring for Sarah was caring for Yeshua, for Jesus.
Mm.
And that totally revolutionized my attitude towards ministry and my family. And I started to realize that ministry to family is ministry. And ministry to Sarah is ministry unto the Lord, even though she's in the kind of worldly perspective, least of his brethren.
Mm-hmm.
And yet ministering to her is, in fact, a very important part of who we are and what has really shaped us as people.
With our ministry, we are often called to travel. We go to Israel, we go to New Zealand and different parts of the world where we do a lot of ministry, and we have to leave Sarah behind. And God provided a beautiful woman who came into our life when Sarah was around 7. And she came in and just came alongside our family and said to us, I am here to serve you, to do what I can do so that you can do what you need to do for the Lord. And Lynn has been such an incredible help and wonderful gift from God. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's come alongside us, and we call her Sarah's hairy godmother. And we have another, you know, a lot of carers through the years, and many of them, I just can't thank enough for the years of service they've given to our family. And at the moment, another friend, Rebecca, cares for Sarah as if it's her own child as well. And these people make it possible for us to do the ministry that we need to do. And for one example, we another story we could tell you is about, we do ministry in the far east of Russia. And in the 1930s, Stalin wanted to create a homeland for the so-called Jewish people. He tried to get rid of the Jewish people, so he moved them to the far east of Russia.
Wasn't it a bit of a swampland?
A swampland, that's right, a wasteland full of mosquitoes. And it's right on the Chinese border.
I heard that when I visited your congregation one time, so that's how I know.
Yes, that's how you know. So the Jewish people, as innovative as they are, created an incredible shtetl, which is called like a little village, a home for themselves. They created quite a vibrant lifestyle for themselves in this horrible wasteland. And many, over the years, there have been a lot of persecution for them as well. But there's this beautiful place called Birubijan, which when you get off the train, there's a beautiful menorah and a beautiful statue of actually Tevye from Fiddler of the Roof.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of the writings are in Hebrew, Russian, and Yiddish. Mm-hmm. And we were told that there are Jewish people still living in this place called Birubijan. It was hard to believe that because we thought they'd all immigrated and gone back to Israel by now. And so we thought we'd better go and investigate. So we went out there to Birubijan and found so many very, very poor Jewish communities living in squalor, living in ways that we in the West couldn't imagine. Mold and on the walls and the freezing cold of winter gets to minus 35 there, and many are persecuted. And we went out there to minister to these people, and I just remember this one time, it was very difficult. You know, we come from the West, so for these people in Russia to accept us, it was very difficult for them because they think, of course, we have a much easier lifestyle in the West. We wouldn't know what it's like to live out there in the conditions that they are living in. But my friend Rita, our co-worker, said to me, Louise, talk about Sarah. Share her story. So I got up and I talked about our life with Sarah, and it was interpreted in Russian. And when I'd finished, I had all these beautiful Russian ladies just run at me into my arms and hug me, and they were weeping and crying. And because of Sarah, her story, it showed them that, you know, we might look on the outside as if we've got it all together, but really we are as human as they are, and we also have troubles and problems in our lives. And it opened up the doors for us to really love them and speak into their lives. We could, and it was very beautiful, you know.
That's true. And so today we actually do have a congregation in Birubijan in this Jewish autonomous region that continues. And also we planted one just north of Vladivostok. That's not a swear word. That is a town. Vladivostok. There's a town called Artum where we've also got a congregation there. And in fact, our worker Rita is in the far east of Russia right now. Mm-hmm. Ministering to Jewish people there. We run two camps at this time of the year, one in Artum and another one in Birubijan, and this weekend she'll be doing ministry in Birubijan to families there. So it's a wonderful ministry in a very remote area, literally in the middle of nowhere, and yet such a wonderful dynamic ministry has been done amongst the people there.
Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat Shalom, Shabbat, 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 Shalom.
Once again, we're chatting with Lawrence and Louise Hirsch, who are the founders of a ministry to Jewish people called Celebrate Messiah. We'll hear more of their story and more about the impact of their ministry when we return right here on Real Faith.
Looking for resources to grow your faith? Check out Vision Christian Store with books, movies, audio CDs, DVD resources, and more. Plus, free delivery on orders over $50. See visionstore.org.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scatabo, and once again, we're chatting with Lawrence and Louise Hirsch, who are the founders of a ministry to Jewish people called Celebrate Messiah. Next, we're going to learn about this special congregation that Lawrence leads that is specifically designed for believers in Jesus from a Jewish background. But, as we'll hear, it is not only for Jewish believers.
Hevenu shalom alechem. Hevenu shalom alechem. Hevenu shalom alechem. Hevenu shalom, shalom, shalom alechem.
Now, normally I would say you're the pastor of the church. But for a messianic congregation, what is the correct phrase that I should use?
Well, in our congregation, I'm called a rabbi.
Oh, okay.
So I'm the messianic rabbi of Beit HaMashiach, messianic congregation. And my main role really is the executive director of Celebrate Messiah.
Which is the larger organization. The
larger mission organization, yes.
Okay, so you kind of wear two hats.
Exactly.
Well, you have a number of very interesting people in your congregation. Of course, longtime listeners know that we've talked to Nettie, who is a Holocaust survivor.
Yes.
And she has a whole journey that she's been on. And tell us about some of the other members of your congregation.
We have about 35 different ethnic groups. We have some Iranian.
So it's not just people of Jewish origin.
No.
Or heritage.
In fact, you know, for the body of Messiah, it's Jew and Gentile, one in Messiah. And that's mm-hmm. what we wanted our congregation to look like. And I think it's a picture of our marriage as well, how the Lord brought a Gentile and a Jew together.
Okay.
It's one in yeah. Him. And yeah. we feel that's a wonderful picture of our congregation. And a lot of non-Jewish people come to our congregation because they love Israel. They love the Hebraic roots of the faith. Mm-hmm. They want to stand with the Jewish people. And it's not easy for a non-Jewish person to even set foot in a synagogue, never mind, you know, being accepted. So non-Jewish people can be welcomed and, you know, worship the Lord together mm-hmm. in Him. And I think it's a beautiful picture of heaven when you have mm-hmm. so many ethnic groups worshiping the Lord together. So we have Sri Lankans, mm-hmm. we have Israelis, we have South Africans, we have people from Iran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Lawrence says he's baptized more Iranians than he has Jewish people.
Is that right?
Yes. And it's beautiful because
they're Iranian. Why did they find a Messianic Jewish congregation attractive?
Yeah, that's an interesting story too. It was at a time when there were a lot of Iranians coming through, of course, through you know, the boats that were arriving, etc. And it was a very difficult time for them.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time we had this young lady who was part of our congregation that was meeting these Iranians and ministering to them as they came off the boats.
Mm-hmm.
And on one occasion she said, would I mind if she brought some of these Iranian Muslims to our congregation? And I said, yes, that's fine. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, is that a good idea, really?
Well, wouldn't they be Muslim, being from
They
Iran?
Are Muslims. Mm-hmm. And so I said, yes, that's fine. And I was so surprised meeting these beautiful Iranian Muslims. Many of them had come off the boat through those harrowing experiences, near-death experience, or seen people die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they were really so keen to come and meet Jewish people.
And is that right?
So many of them wanted to shake my hand and say, we love you, and we
really?
Want to stand with you. We are one with you. Even though our countries or our leaders don't
yeah.
agree, we love the Jewish people. And I was so shocked
wow.
by that. And we began a ministry at that time to these Iranians because we had a lovely Jewish believer in our congregation who spoke Farsi because he was born mm-hmm. in Iran, in mm-hmm. Persia. And so we were having Bible studies for the Iranians in Farsi for them during our services. So the first part of the service was the worship, and they mm-hmm. loved it because it had a bit of a Middle Eastern flair in our services and
yeah,
lovely
with the music and
dancing
everything.
And music.
Yeah.
And then when I began to preach the sermon, my friend Yigal would take them out to the back for a Bible study, and it was quite interesting because Yigal would be wearing a prayer shawl, a traditional garb that you wear during a morning service with the tassels.
Jewish type.
A Jewish
dress.
Prayer shawl,
yep.
yeah. And he would go out, and 10, 15 Iranians would follow him.
Wow.
And there's a scripture in the prophets that speak about how 10 Gentiles will take hold of the robe of a Jew and say, take me to your God.
Wow.
And it was really every week a picture of that happening, this wow. Jewish Persian sharing with the Iranian Muslims about Jesus being the Messiah. And many of these Iranians still continue to worship with us yeah. in our congregation, which is a blessing. And as we said, over the last 5-7 years or so, I've baptized more Iranian Muslims than I have Jewish people.
Wow.
I would love to say at least there'll be equal amounts, but ministry amongst Jewish people is challenging.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd have any ministry to Muslims and never set out to do that, but it's what happened.
Yeah.
But certainly in these days, we are beginning to see Jewish people come to faith in greater numbers than ever before. There's a very vibrant and young movement happening in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Jewish people have come to the Lord from countries of the former Soviet Union. We have not only an English-speaking congregation here in Melbourne, we have a Russian-speaking congregation.
Oh, wow.
Most of those people are elderly Russian Jews who survived the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful to see them worshiping the Messiah. It's so heartwarming and amazing, really. And so around the world, there's a movement of Jews coming to faith in the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, it's still hand-picked fruit, so to speak, mm-hmm. but it's growing.
Yeah.
And it really shows us that we're living at very special times. Mm-hmm. I believe we're living in end times when we are just prior to the Messiah's coming, seeing a move of God amongst the Jewish people that will make a difference to the whole world, in fact. So it's a very exciting times that we haven't seen since perhaps the book of Acts, when Jewish mm-hmm. people came to the Lord back in the first early Messianic movement when Jesus was here and the disciples followed him. Yeah, we're very excited about what God's doing here in Melbourne itself. In Melbourne, we have work in what we affectionately call the Holy Land of Australia. And that's where most Jewish people in Australia live. We have a very large Jewish community in the Caulfield environs. There's several mm-hmm. suburbs around there too,
mm-hmm.
enclosed by a religious area called an Eruv. And there's about 75,000 Jewish people living there and about 45 synagogues. And we have in the heart of this area a Messianic congregation called Beit HaMashiach and a Russian-speaking one called Dom Messii. And we are now actually currently starting building the first Messianic congregation and Messianic center in the Southern Hemisphere, a special purpose-built facility in the heart of Caulfield. And we're very excited about this Messianic center, and we really would ask people to pray for it and help see a testimony for the Messiah right in the heart of the Jewish community in Melbourne as this community continues to grow.
Now, as if that wasn't enough, I mean, you're involved here in Melbourne and also overseas, but also you have the opportunity to go to many Christian churches because during the Easter season, you do seders. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's a real privilege to be able to go and minister in a whole lot of different churches around the country, sharing about the Jewishness of Jesus and the Jewish mm-hmm. background of the gospel. And especially in the festivals of Israel, we see it so beautifully pictured. The gospel is there. And one thing that, of course, we've become quite well known for around Melbourne in particular is the Passover seders that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
Not only explanations of the Passover, but sometimes we'll put on a special banquet. And
yes, I had the opportunity to go on. It's fantastic.
It's lovely. We've been hosting those banquets at the St. Kilda Town Hall, having mm-hmm. around 450 or so people coming together, celebrating a traditional Passover banquet, but explaining how Jesus fits into that as the Messiah.
Yes, he's the fulfillment. He is the Passover
Absolutely.
Lamb.
Absolutely. He is the Passover Lamb who has been slain for us. And we celebrate this traditional Seder pointing to the Messiah. And,
complete with Jewish music. It was more like a wedding festival.
It really
Lots
is, because we do a lot of Israeli dancing.
Yeah,
we have a very vibrant band.
Yeah.
And I think it's the dancing and the party feel that we have. It's just such a beautiful. Also, a lot of the worship
mm-hmm.
is very beautiful, all in Hebrew and English.
Yes, this year we had a wonderful Passover Seder at the St. Kilda Town Hall and had a number of Jewish people who had come for the first time.
Mm.
And this one Israeli guy who was staying with us at the time, because we actually also host Israeli travelers in our home, which is a wonderful ministry that Christians can get involved in. But we had this lovely young Israeli staying with us, and he experienced our Messianic Passover Seder, especially at the end of the night we were worshiping the Lord. And there were many other believers raising up their hands and worshiping him from their hearts, and that really moved him. And so in the car ride home, Louise asked him, how did you find the Passover? And he said, it was wonderful, but I'm especially jealous of those people who have such a connection with God. I could see they loved God and had a connection with him. I'm jealous of it. Reminded me of the scripture in Romans chapter 11, verse 11, which is a profound scripture, and says, salvation has come to the Gentiles to make Israel jealous.
Wow, so that was fulfilling it right there.
Exactly. It was an amazing time.
Lawrence and Louise, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you, Eric, for having us, and shalom to you.
It's a pleasure, Eric. Shalom and God bless.
Shabbat shalom, Shabbat shalom, Shabbat 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 shalom.
Well, that was the conclusion of our three-part conversation with Lawrence and Louise Hirsch, who are the founders of a ministry called Celebrate Messiah. It's an interdenominational evangelistic ministry dedicated to raising the banner of Messiah amongst God's ancient people in Australia and abroad. Also, as we heard, Lawrence is the executive director, and he also provides leadership to a Messianic Jewish congregation in Melbourne. To learn more, their website is CelebrateMessiah.com.au. That's CelebrateMessiah.com.au. And today we'll end with this verse from the book of Romans, where Paul writes, I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew and then to the Gentile. Well, thanks for joining us for the conclusion of Lawrence and Louise Hirsch's story right here on Real Faith.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.